Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karabhavahai, Tejasvinavati Tamastu Madhidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
We're in verse 66, chapter 766.
Satyam jnanam anantam cheti, satyam jnanam anantam cheti, evam brahma swarupalakshanam, evam brahma swarupalakshanam, uktva guha, guha hitatvena, uktva guha hitatvena, koshe shvetat padarshitam, koshe shvetat padarshitam.
Sandhi. Satyam, jnanam, anantam, cha, iti, evam, brahma, swalakshanam, uktva, guha, ahitatvena, kosheshu, etat, pradarshitam.
It's guha ahita, that's good.
In the Taittiriya Upanishad, there's a very famous verse, satyam jnanam anantam brahma. Brahman is satyam, means true or existence itself, pure existence, which is jnanam, consciousness, which is anantam, limitless. It's like the sat chit ananda, right? Sat is existence, chit is consciousness. Ananda is limitless or fullness. But satyam jnanam anantam is the very swarupa, the very nature of Brahman. And so this definition is called swarupa lakshanam. Remember when we looked last week at tattvastha lakshanam? Tattvastha lakshanam is when we're defining something by pointing out something that is adjacent to it or is tangential to it. Like, for instance, if I'm pointing to a crow on top of a house, to make you be able to notice that house among all of the other houses that are similar. You know, the house with the crow on top of it. The crow is tangential to the house, but it allows me to recognize the house, right? But if I, that's called the tattvastha lakshana, that tangential attribute that can come and go. It's not essential to it. But swarupa lakshana is the very nature of the thing. So swarupa, nature, the lakshana means how it's defined, how its characteristics. So here, he's giving the swarupa lakshanam. So he says, Brahma swarupa lakshanam, okay, is what satyam jnanam anantam. Satyam jnanam anantam, where that which is satyam, Brahman, is satyam, it is existence itself, and that existence is consciousness. This is so important to understand, that being itself is consciousness. And consciousness is being. It's not that existence has an attribute of consciousness. You know, some existent thing has this quality of consciousness. It's that consciousness and existence are one and the same thing. And that consciousness is limitless. So, for instance, just in your experience as a human being, you take for granted when you say, I exist, I am an existent being. You can as well say, I am an existent conscious being. You can't separate your existence from your consciousness experientially. So your amness, your being, and your consciousness are one and the same thing. We don't really realize that, but once it's pointed out, you can understand it. So here, in the Taittiriya Upanishad, Brahman is defined as satyam jnanam anantam. And a little later on in the Upanishad, it had been defined as that from which all beings come is sustained, and by which all beings are sustained, and into which all beings resolve. In that definition, we say Brahman is the one from whom all beings come, because of whom all beings are sustained, and into whom all beings resolve. That's tattvastha lakshana, right? Because Brahman's being defined by something which is tangential to it. Right? Brahman is there, whether the universe manifests or sustained or not. When we can say it like this, Brahman is the one from whom the entire universe, you know, projects as manifest, the one who sustains the universe, and the one in to whom the universe resolves. So that's not really telling you anything about Brahman per se, in terms of the very nature of the one from whom the universe comes, but it's telling you that Brahman is the one because of whom this universe comes. So that's Tattvastha Lakshana. It's tangential to Brahman. So the next question would be, well, who is that Brahman? Right? Who is that Brahman? What is that Brahman like? So then we can go to the Swarupa Lakshanam. Brahman is Satyam, Jnanam, Anantam. The nature of that one from whom this whole creation has come is pure existence, which is pure consciousness, which is limitless, one without a second. That is the nature of Brahman. And from this limitless conscious being, consciousness, conscious existence, from this whole universe springs forth, is sustained and resolves. Now, still, we're at what we call paroksha jnanam. This is still paroksha jnanam, means indirect knowledge. Like, for instance, if you hear this for the first time now, I'm saying to you, you know, there is this Brahman who is pure consciousness, pure existence, and from this Brahman, the whole universe comes, is sustained, and resolves. You might say, oh, that's really interesting. But there's not anything there so far for you to say, and that Brahman I am. Right? So now you have an understanding of what Brahman is, but there's no recognition that I am that Brahman. So that's what we mean by paroksha jnanam, indirect knowledge. You have an understanding of Brahman. This is what the Upanishads teach Brahman to be, but you don't know yet that I am this Brahman. Okay? So this is yet another example, going through a whole series of Upanishad examples here in this section. So it says, Uktva, the teacher, having told this, Satyam Jnanam Anantam, in this manner, the Brahma Swalakshanam, means Swarupa Lakshanam. So the teacher, having told the very nature of Brahman as Satyam Jnanam Anantam, having said this, then Guha Hitatvena Kosheshu Etat Pradarshitam. Etat Pradarshitam. This is shown then, after having done the Brahman, the Swarupa Lakshana of Brahman, after having said that, then the Upanishad goes on to reveal that Brahman, which is pure consciousness, existence, limitless consciousness, existence, from which the whole universe comes, that Brahman is located in the guha, means in the guha of your, it is your innermost being. The guha means in the cave of the heart, right? The guha is the cave, and we usually as the cave of the heart. So when we look at the five sheaths, called the panchakoshas, the five sheaths, and if we were to analyze the nature, trying to find who am I in reference to this body that's here, you know, in the Upanishad, the student goes to the sisha, goes to the guru, and asks in one form or another, who am I? Who is there anyone here who survives death? What is the truth of this creation? In some way that the student's going to be asking the teacher that. And so now, if we're just looking at, in reference to this physical person that is sitting there before the teacher, this person needs now to be able to recognize what is this innermost nature. And that innermost nature needs to be connected with Brahman. That's what's going to happen. So that it basically, what it goes like this. This is Brahman. Pure, the way Vidyaranya is dealing with it. This is Brahman, the one who is pure, infinite, conscious being. And from this pure, infinite, conscious being, all of this has come. Right? Then where is it going to end up? This conscious being from which this whole creation has come, which we call Brahman, that conscious being you are. That's the Mahavakya. That conscious being that we call Brahman, from which the entire universe has come, which sustains the entire universe, and into which the entire universe resolves, that Brahman is you. It is? how can that Brahman be me? Because I'm not this whole universe. I'm not responsible for creating this whole universe. And so now the question becomes, what is the I? Where is the I? Where is this I located then? Right? Who is the I that they're talking about? Because obviously it can't be this physical body. In fact, this physical body is one of the Buddhas. It's one of the beings in this universe. Right? So we can't be talking about I as this physical body. In fact, this physical body comes from food, is sustained by food, and goes back into food. Right? And so maybe it's not going to be the Annamaya Kosha, maybe it's going to be the Pranamaya Kosha. You know, but the Pranamaya Kosha is also something that seems to take birth, to come into being and go out of being. So maybe that comes from the mind. You know, maybe that comes from the intellect. You know? Where does this... So they keep going through, in fact, I won't go through the whole Upanishad for you, because actually this is a whole section in the Type 3 Upanishad where it takes the student through each one of the layers, the koshas, that each one of the points of identification that you take to be the I, the physical body, the vital force, you know, the mind, the intellect. And then we can get to the Anandamaya Kosha, which is in the Taittiriya Upanishad, where they get to the Anandamaya Kosha, which is just what? At that point of inquiry, there is no identification with anything else, not with the body, not with the sense organs, not with the physical body, not with the mind. All this is all going innermost, 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 innermost. What is interior? What is innermost? And what we end up with, what the student ends up with, is that being which illumines the Anandamaya Kosha. What is the conscious being? Just the conscious being that illumines the Anandamaya Kosha, what do you recognize that as? Just conscious being itself. And that's where the Mahavakya comes in. Mahavakya means that statement that the Mahavakya is what all of the Upanishads, is the essence of every Upanishad. Mahavakya is that which connects Brahman, the identity of Brahman, with yourself. That's what a Mahavakya is. It literally means great statement. But what is the great statement? The great statement is that Brahman, which is the conscious being from which is the self of the entire creation, that conscious being is in fact yourself. That is the Mahavakya. And anything else, there's many other different types of vakyas, as we'll see as we go on. There's many other different types of vakyas in the Upanishads, but they're all called avantara vakyas. They're all secondary vakyas, secondary statements. There are secondary statements means they're supportive statements. You have to say all of these statements. You have to talk about Brahman. You have to talk about the creation. You have to talk about the five shis, the five koshas, and all of this. To make all of that clear, so that when you say that thou art, you are that, it makes sense. Right? So all of these words are necessary in order to put your mind in a position to be able to recognize that the innermost being that you are, the me, the conscious being, that very simple, simple being, when we did the meditation, that simple being, which is just my own simple presence, which is fine and whole and complete unto itself, which is strong and secure and steady, changeless. Just this simple presence, which is whole and complete. It is this simple presence that is the self of the creation. So this simple presence that is the very being, the very essence of the entire creation. That is the Mahavakya. And that Mahavakya has to be said at the right time. So, without the avantara vakyas, you know, the supportive vakyas, the supportive statements, the teacher, imagine it, the teacher comes in and says, you are Brahman. You are that. You are Ishvara. Brahman is the innermost consciousness which you are. And walks away. So there's no knowledge that's taking place. Right? No knowledge can take place. So the avantara-vakyas have to build up the situation for you, you know, to take you step by step by step by step to a point of understanding where that mahavakya will bring it all together. And so bring the understanding together, which is the identity of yourself with Brahman. So here, when it says, this is just repeating, giving a different example, the satyam jnanam anantam, these, which have been told now to be the swarupa lakshana of Brahman, that is now shown to be abiding there in the cave of the heart. Right? That's the Taittiriya Upanishad. And so, to really do this thoroughly, we'd have to do the Taittiriya Upanishad. We're not going to. Okay? So, we will do it later. In fact, there are certain sections of the Taittiriya, this one in particular, which have the entire Vedanta. The entire Vedanta. The Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma, just a couple of lines. Shankar has written many, many pages of Bhasha on this. It's a very famous Bhasha. And often Swamiji will just teach this Bhasha. They'll take this one Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma and then teach the Bhasha. You know, spend 2 or 3 weeks on it just teaching that Bhasha. It's absolutely complete. It's very, very beautiful. So we'll do it compared to...
Soon?
Soon. After we our soon is... we have to have a third class. Yeah. Let's look at this 67 because we're just going to be doing looking at some of these different verses. Parokshena vibhujyendaha indraha Parokshena vibhujyendraha Ya atmetyadilakshanat aparokshikartumichan Chaturvaram gurum yayau. Parokshena vibhujya indraha yaha atma ityadi lakshanat. Oh, atma iti adi lakshanat. Aparokshi kartum ichan. Chaturvaram gurum yayau. Indra. This is in the Chandogya Upanishad. Indra had to approach his guru 4 different times. And each time his guru had him sit in contemplation and do tapas for something like 20 years. Or maybe it was more. 4 times. He ended up having to stay with his guru for 101 years. Okay? They approached him 4 different times. So here it says, Vibhujya, parokshena vibhujya, having understood indirectly, parokshena vibhujya, having understood indirectly, Indra, ya atma iti adilakshanat, from the characteristics of from the characteristics, the lakshana, the definition of Brahman as this, ya atma. This is what it says. That atma, which is, the guru tells Indra this. Now Indra has to go out and figure out what he means. He tries to figure out, can't figure it out. Spends years working on it. comes back and tells him the wrong thing. So then he comes back and then asks the guru to help him again. So the guru tells him something. Indra goes off for years trying to figure it out. This tapas doesn't get it. Comes back again with the wrong answer. 4th time, he gets it. Okay. So this is in this section of the Upanishad. It's a really nice story. But what he starts out with is this. That Atma is Apahatapapma, is something which is totally free from papa. There's no negative, there's no sin. You know, if sin's the right word, there's nothing in it that creates harm. There's no papa. It's totally free from papa. And it's vijaraha. It's free from any type of disease. It's vimrityuhu. For it, there is no death at all. It's vishokaha. It has no sorrow. So, ityadi. These are the main characteristics. So, the beginning verse is like that. Atma is totally free from anything that causes pain or harm. It's free from sorrow. It's free from old age. It's free from death. That's the nature of the Atma. Now go think about it. It's more involved than that, basically. Goes and thinks about it, comes back. But finally, so the guru tells him all of this. Then, aparokshi karatum ichan. Indra desiring, ichan means desiring, to make this aparoksha means to make it be direct, to realize it. The guru has said all of these things. Now Indra wants to realize it. So to realize it, he has to do vichara. He has to do a lot of analysis. How can this be true? What is the teacher telling me? The teacher, they only give a few lines of what the teacher is saying. But the teacher is guiding Indra, then Indra has to go and think it over and see, how can this be? How can the Atma be like this? My Atma certainly is not subject, it is not free from death. It's certainly not free from old age. You know, what about me is free from death? It's free from old age, free from all of these things. So now, Indra really wanting to see it. Aparoksha means to have the immediate direct understanding. He has to approach his teacher four times. It says, chaturvaram means four times. Chaturvaram means four times. Gurum yayao. He goes to his teacher four times. And so four times his teacher directs him, right? And each time he takes Indra a little bit closer, going more inward. To recognizing that pratyeka atma, that innermost self, is the atma that the guru had said was free from death. But see, this whole thing, that all that Vidyaranya is playing with right now is these two terms. To really understand the difference between paroksha jnanam and aparoksha jnanam. Indirect knowledge, direct knowledge. If as your teacher I tell you, the atma, the self, you come to me and say, who is, please Bhagavan, teach me, please teach me, who is the self? What is the self? The self is that one that is, you know, free from death, free from sin, free from old age, free from sorrow. Then what?
Where is it?
Yeah. How can I be that? And so then the teacher will direct the inquiry of the student. Right? Well, direct the inquiry of the student until the student recognizes, that aha moment, I am that. To recognize I am that, I can't recognize myself as this body because this body is not that. I can't recognize myself as the sense organs or the vital force because they're not that. Right? They're subject to death, subject to change, you know, subject to modification. The mind. Subject to death, subject to change, subject to modification. The ahankara, in fact, everything I've ever taken myself to be is subject to change. And so that cannot be the self that the teacher is talking about. And so the teacher will keep directing the student toward that recognition of this self that I am, which is free from all of those things. And when I recognize the self that I am, which is free from all of those things, that's aparoksha jnanam. Until that recognition is there, it's paroksha jnanam, indirect knowledge. And so, indirect knowledge is not good enough for us. You know, if it's indirect knowledge, it's a belief. Like, what if I say to you, Yourself is free from death, free from harm. It is changeless. It never grows old. Go in peace. Now, that can be like a religion in a way. This is a religion since this is what we believe. Like if I say, you know, the Shastra says that the soul transmigrates, birth after birth. And you get better, and you need to be responsible in terms of dharma and adharma, in terms of your activities, and that it's important that you follow dharma, because you'll be accruing punya and papa, you know, positive results and negative results that will affect your later births. So that makes, perhaps that makes sense to you, and you believe that, and you live your life accordingly. And you can say, and the Shastra also says, you know, that I have an innermost self, which is the self, in fact, the very self of all beings. So you believe that. It's your religion. It's the teachings in your religion. But there's no freedom in that, because what you would say, then, I really believe that, I believe that, now, then you go to your, as part of that very religion, that Vedic religion, I believe that, I believe the Vedas, that this is what the Vedas tell me. I believe this to be true. But now I have to go to the guru, I have to go to the teacher to be able to see it. Right? So really, the whole Vedas, you can look at the whole Vedas in the Vedic culture as being paroksha jnanam. Because imagine all of the Upanishads, even if you take it kind of in a blanket way, all of the Upanishads themselves are learned. They're all studied when they teach for the Brahmins, when you memorize the whole Vedas, learn to chant the whole Vedas, you're chanting all the Upanishads also. Right? So it's not like what is in the Upanishads is unknown, but it's just known from a distance. You know the Vedas say this, and you know that you have to go to the guru, you have to go to a teacher in order to understand, learn it. Right? But you know what you need to learn, you just don't know what it means. You know? Like if I tell you, you are the self, you know, yourself is the self in all beings. Do you know what that means? I had when I was 18, I've told the story before, but I've never forgotten it. So before I knew about the Upanishads or anything, I was in New York City. And one young boy, he was probably 18 or 20, he came up to me, and I don't even think I knew him. He was just starting a conversation with me, and he said, I'm God. And I just wanted to get away from there. Even though it was an odd experience because I think probably because my own samskaras or having read some things in the East, there's something in me that knew that there was some kind of truth in that, but I didn't have any belief that he had that truth. And I certainly didn't have it. You know, so all of these, I mean, it's a very profound thing, you know. That's what the Mahavakya says. It says, you are Ishvara. You are God, right? Tattvamasi, that's what that Mahavakya says. You are that. And so you can know. See, we can all know that the Upanishads, that the Upanishads, each Upanishad, you know, says that. And the Mahavakyas, there's four major Mahavakyas, there are many other Mahavakyas also, but each Mahavakya says that. You are that. You are God. I am Brahman. You know, prajnanam brahma, Brahman is consciousness, the consciousness that I am, that is Brahman. That's what all the Mahavakyas say. Mm-hmm. But now, how to recognize the truth of that? So usually the way that Vidyaranya is going through it here is that the Upanishads will, they do it in different ways, but the ones that he's working with now are really thoroughly unfolding the nature of Brahman, you know, as being satyam, jnanam, anantam, as being the one from whom the whole creation comes and is sustained and goes back. But then, once you kind of understand that that is the nature of reality as presented in the Upanishads, then the question is, how do you fit into that? You know, because the Upanishads are not meant to give you indirect knowledge. They're meant to give you self-knowledge. And so now the Upanishads spend the time unveiling you, to you, describing to you the nature of Brahman. And then having described the nature of Brahman, and think of it like this, just logically, how they describe the nature of Brahman: pure, limitless existence consciousness, from which everything comes. The entire universe comes from that. Is this body part of the universe? Right? Are you part of the universe? Let alone the body. If we say, Brahman is the one from whom the entire creation comes, is sustained, and resolves back into. Are you part of the creation? This body, mind, sense organs. You'd have to say yes, because, I mean, I could say, definitely all of you are part of the creation. Right? Because I'm aware of you, right? I, of course, am different. So, yeah, we are all part of the creation. What is this? What do I mean by that? Is this body part of the creation? Yes. Would I include my sense organs as part of the creation? Yes. Right? Because the sense organs are part of the body. They're born with the body. What about the life force, the vital force, breathing? Is that part of the creation? How can you say no? Where would it be then if it's not part of the creation, right? So the breath and the energy, that's all part of the creation. What about your thoughts, your mind? Is that part of the creation? Yes, it has to be part of the creation because there's no thing outside of the creation, right? And so it exists in duality. My mind is different from your mind. You know, and so if I look at you, it's obvious to me that your mind is part of the creation, so I should include my mind in that too. What about my intellect? A power to make decisions. Is that part of the creation? Yes, that's part of the creation. Okay, what about my ahankara, the I notion? I am doing this, I am doing that, I am doing this. Is that part of the creation? Well, actually, that's just a thought. So yes, that's part of the creation. So now, who is Brahman? Brahman is the one from whom this whole creation has come, is sustained, and into whom it resolves. Okay, so now I've just given my body to the creation, I've given my sense organs to the creation, I've given my mind to the creation, I've given even the I thought to the creation. What is left to give? You know, I've given everything that makes me an individual to the creation. Is there anything left? What can be left? Right. Well, that being, that conscious being that illumines the body and the mind and the body and the sense organs and the mind and the buddhi and even the ahankara, the intellect and even the ahankara. This me, this conscious presence, which because of which all of these things shine. That conscious presence is innermost. Right, I can't go behind that. What's behind that conscious presence, which is me? There's no way for you to know that. You can't get behind conscious existence. So your being is really the bottom line of your experience. But how is Brahman defined? As pure conscious being from which the whole creation comes, is sustained, and resolves. When you go innermost into yourself, what is there? The pure conscious being, which is me, right? And so then what happens is that conscious being, which is Brahman, is that conscious being which you are, right? And then this knowledge becomes aparoksha, right? I understand that this conscious being that is non-objectifiable, this is the conscious being, which is Brahman. So that's this paroksha, aparoksha that they keep, that Vidyaranya keeps working on here. So let's do the next verse. It's the same idea. Atma va idam iti, atma va idam iti, adau paroksham brahmalakshitam, adau paroksham brahmalakshitam. Adyaro papavadabhyam
Adhyaro papavadabhyam prajnanam brahma darshitam prajnanam brahma darshitam.
He says another verse he's chanting from the Aitreya.
Atma va idam ityadau paroksham brahma lakshitam adhyaropa apavadabhyam prajnanam brahma darshitam.
This it's actually atma atma vai idam. This is another famous verse. It goes like this:
atma va idam eka eva agre asit na anyat kinchana mishat.
It says, and you've heard this from other Upanishads also, it says, in the beginning there was only one atma. The self, in the beginning, the self alone was.
Na anyat kinchana.
There was nothing else. In the beginning, the self alone was. There was nothing else. Mishat, that was winking. I mean, really, there was nothing else winking. Hello? Testing? Oh, it's okay.
There was nothing, there is nothing at all, nothing else waking. Nothing else had any life. There was no activity at all. There was only the one Atma.
Winking okay. Is a Sanskrit?
Yeah, Mishat. Yeah. Okay.
So, Brahman here is being described lakshitam paroksham, right? Because if I say, in the beginning, all there was one self alone. There was nothing else. Okay. Actually, it says a little differently. This is more important. I didn't say it quite right. It says, in the beginning, this, idam, this was one self alone. Right? That's important. In the beginning, this, idam means this, that you experience here, this was one self alone. There was nothing else, no activity at all. Okay. In the beginning, this was only your being. It was only one self alone. It's amazing. It says it was only Atma. In the beginning, this, all that was here was the Atma. Then, adhya ropa apavada abhyam prajnanam brahma darshitam. Prajnanam brahma is a famous Mahavakya. It means Brahman. That Brahman, that infinite self, is prajnanam, is consciousness. The conscious, prajnanam Brahma. This Brahman, which was the infinite, that Brahman is prajnanam, conscious, the conscious being. And so that's a Mahavakya. So what he says is, adhya ropa apavada abhyam prajnanam Brahma darshitam. By adhya ropa apavada, this teaching methodology, prajnanam brahman was shown. Prajnanam brahman means it was shown, it was taught in the Aitreya Upanishad that prajnan, that brahman is myself alone, is the consciousness which I am. How is it shown? By this teaching methodology called adhyaropa apavada. You've heard of it? Adhyaropa apavada. Adhyaropa. If I say like this, here is this creation, right? This creation exists. This creation before you exists. Here it is, the whole infinite creation. This infinite creation is Ishvara. Say if I say that. This infinite creation is the Lord. And this infinite creation which exists, this infinite creation is the Lord. Or if I look at you and say, here's this body, mind, sense organs, individual that you are. If I say, you are this body, mind, sense organs.
You are that, this body, mind, sense organs. You are a conscious being in the form of this body, mind, sense organs. Ishwara is a whole manifest creation. Okay. Now, that's the adhyaropa. That is the superimposition. Because now, what we say, we accept this whole creation as being here. Namarupa. We accept all of the names and forms of the creation. We accept this body, mind, sense organs as being here. But now, I could never say that this body, mind, sense organ self, which is a conscious being, right? I say, you have to say this. Your body, mind, sense organs, this person here, is a conscious being. I'm a conscious being. I can say this Ishwara, as the Upanishads unfold it, Ishwara is a conscious being. Right? That's how the Upanishads unfold Ishwara, the very conscious being from which the whole creation has come. So Ishwara itself is a conscious being. Now, from this vantage point, I can't say, I am Ishwara. I can say, I am a conscious being. I can say, Ishwara is a conscious being. Right? Fine. Now, I can go through all of the stages of what, all I can go through a very elaborate definition of what this conscious being is. The five koshas, the three bodies, the five shis, the three bodies. You know, I can become very elaborate on what this conscious being is. I can become very elaborate on what Ishwara is and my relationship with Ishwara. And so when I'm doing that, that is all the adhyaropa. This is the adhyaropa, right? This entire creation that we're experiencing, all of the names and forms, and we can get into great detail about what all of it is and how I as a jiva am related to it. But to gain knowledge, what do we have to do? We have to peel the superimposition, right? We have to peel the superimposition off the vastu, off the self. So what does that mean? I have to kind of, in order to make you recognize yourself, or that this whole thing is me, that I am Brahman, that I am Ishwara, how am I going to do that? I have to be able to negate this superimposition. I have to be able to go through the superimposition to what is actually there, the vastu that is actually there. And so to do that, I have to first accept yourself as a jiva, body, mind, sense organs, the whole thing, and then I have to go through the body, mind, sense organs to recognize the conscious being that is abiding there as myself. Then I have to do the same thing in reference to the whole creation. I have to go through this whole creation to the recognition of the existence, which is the very self of all of the objects I experience in the creation. It's only when I can do that, that it's called apavada. It's the negation of the superimposition that I can get to the underlying reality. So if I say adhyaropa apavada, this is a teaching methodology that first looks at, gives the superimposition of the entire creation, and then takes it away. Right? I have to take it away back to the Atma, so that I can end up saying this. This entire creation that I'm perceiving, now that's adhyaropa, that's the superimposition. This entire creation that I'm perceiving, including this body, mind, sense organs, is nothing but consciousness. That's the apavada. So how can I do that? How can I say that this entire creation that I perceive is nothing but consciousness? Well, here's the pathway. Okay? The pathway in reference to the individual is really the going through kosha by kosha by kosha, objectifying the body. Just try to think of this as a kind of an easy path. The apavada of this superimposition goes like this. You objectify the body, you recognize that this body belongs to the creation. So you give it to the creation. You objectify the sense organs, you realize these sense organs belong to the creation, you give it to the creation. You objectify your mind,
You realized all of the thoughts you're aware of. They belong to the creation. We're still in the Adhyaropa. We're just giving all the Adhyaropa into the creation. Right? So now, you give the sense organs, you give the mind to the creation. Then you give the buddhi, the intellect, to the creation, because you're aware of that too. Right? And so all of these things are now being given over to the creation. As you give each one of them to the creation, they become part of Ishvara. Right? They are. Once you recognize that this body is part of the creation, then it's part of Ishvara. So the body, the mind, the sense organs, all of these adhyaropas, all of these superimpositions are now given to Ishvara. Now even the I thought is given to Ishvara until you finally can't objectify anything else. What is left? Just your conscious being. Now there's the conscious, one conscious being that you are with all of the upadis belonging to Ishvara. Right? One conscious being, non-objectifiable, all upadis belonging to Ishvara. So now what are you left with? You're left with one self and Ishvara. You see that? You're left with, because everything's been given to Ishvara. So now you're left with just one self, which is not objectifiable, so it doesn't belong in space. You can't give it to Ishvara. Right? Because it's not an object that you can objectify as being part of the creation. So now you're left with one self and one creation. So we say one self, one Ishvara. Now you can say, now we just have one Adhyaropa, Ishvara, right? Is there one self and one creation? That's not Advaita. That's Sankhya. Sankhya's got many selves, in fact. Let's say you've got one self now and one creation. But now we still have the dress of Ishvara. Is the creation now different from the one self? And so the apavada has to continue, right? The negation has to continue. Now we have to look at this one creation and say, is there anything in this creation that has a separate being from this conscious being, which is myself, which is my being? Does this whole creation, which is Ishvara, have a separate reality, a separate consciousness, a separate existence? And then we analyze the nature of the creation and we say, there is nothing here in this creation. There's nothing. The creation itself is infinitely divisible. The creation itself is something that comes into being and goes out of being continually. So we cannot find a substance here. And so then we say, oh, that's what the Upanishad meant. That all of this, in the beginning, was just me. Was just one self alone. There was nothing else. It's from this one self that this comes, is sustained, and resolves. There is no second thing there. And so this whole Adhyaropa Apavada has to be done to take you to the position of recognizing, even when you're seeing this Adhyaropa, through that automatic negation, you're left with the conscious being which you are. Right? So it's like if this what we call vichara is thorough, it's just like if you look at the clay pot, you look at a clay pot, you can see the pot, and you can see the clay, and you can also see clearly that there's nothing here but clay, in spite of seeing the pot. Right? If I were to say, see the clay pot? And I say, you see the clay and you see the pot, but can you accept that really there's only clay there? I say, no. You say, no, well, what is there besides the clay? The pot. Well, does the pot have any being apart from the clay? No. Does the pot have any essence apart from the clay? No. Does it have anything apart from the clay? No. Is it dependent on the clay? Yes. So now can you say, really, in terms of what substance, the only thing there is clay? Yes, I can say that. So now, if your vichara with this Adhyaropa Apavada is thorough, when you're looking out at this creation,
you can say, I see all of these names and forms. I have experienced this creation, including my body, my sense organs, my mind, my thoughts. I experienced the whole thing. But the only thing here is consciousness. I see that too. I see that too, not that I'm looking at consciousness, but I am consciousness. And there is nothing in this experience that's away from it, ever, in any way. There's nothing in this experience that's away from the existence consciousness. The existence consciousness, which I am, is not an object. There's nothing here away from it, and there's nothing here that has any substance. Because I've recognized thoroughly that any object in this creation is just name and form alone. Name and form is infinitely divisible. You can't find anything here. And so the substance that I'm enjoying, the substance that this universe enjoys, is the substance which is my being. And for this, any type of your meditation is so helpful. Because in meditation, if you're just sitting with your, relax everything, and you're just sitting with your mind, and you recognize the stability of your being, you can recognize the stability of your being in reference to your thoughts, in reference to your emotions, then the same stability of your being that you recognize there is the stability that is there in these larger perceptions. Right? So that's the thing, is to take that meditate, what you see so clearly in terms of meditation, and then recognize that right now, with your eyes open, looking at this room, your sense organs are open, looking at this room, your perception right now is nothing but a vritti. It's a thought modification. That's all. Right? If you have your eyes open and you're daydreaming, where are you? Well, if you're daydreaming. Mm-hmm. You're thinking about something else, but that's where you are. Whatever the vritti is, you're illumining that vritti. Okay, now, if you're sitting, say, in meditation, you've slowed everything down, and you're just kind of watching your mind and being with your mind and recognizing your own presence that's illumining that, and you're able to recognize the stability of your presence in reference to the thought, right? That you pervade the thought, you're the self of the thought, you're the stable presence of the thought. If you can see that in meditation, what is the difference now when you're having a vritti of this room? You're still the stable presence, the one that pervades that thought. You see that? Now you say, yeah, but that's only my thought. What about this out here? There is no out here. In terms of anything that has substance, there is an out here in reference to your body and sense organs. But you can't establish an object out here because everything's infinitely divisible. So if you can recognize the pervasive stability of your being in reference to your thought and recognize that there is nothing tangible in this world, then the stability of your being holds true because you can't find anything here that is stable. You can't find an object here. And so you have to recognize, allow the stability of your being that is so easily recognizable, say when we do nitta dhyasana, slow everything down, that is not any different when your sense organs are open and looking outside. You think it's different. You think it's different because when your eyes are open, you have the three-dimensional space which you're experiencing your body with these sense organs looking out in three-dimensional space. And so, in that situation, because of the dehatma buddhi, because your identification with the body, it immediately throws you into being a person within a universe. Right? But actually this person, that you're calling this person is within the universe, and you are the self that illumines the whole thing. Right, so that you need to let the person be in the universe, right, and recognize that yourself is objectifies all of that. Yourself is pervasive to all of that. That's the understanding that has to take place. Right.
And then you can say, when you see that, then you can say, ah, I am the whole. Right? One self, one creation. That creation is not away from me. Now, let's stop there. Purnamada, Purnamada, Purnat, Purnamudachate, Purnasya, Purnamadaya, Purnameva, Vasishate, Om Shanti, 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 Hari Om Shri Guru Pyo Namaha, Hari Om.